Hey, welcome back to another week of Fox on Sports here on Bedford 105.1. I am Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
I was going to be like, and that's your cue to actually speak, guy who's not sitting in the room with me. So Hansen's not here. It's Valentine's Day.
Unrelated.
It's kind of related. You're on a trip. Your wife is there. Like, you know, it's not like you're on some kind of a bizarre junket to New Orleans.
No. Yeah. It is a full family trip, so.
Right.
Family Valentine's Day week trip.
Right. And why not take it before February vacation so that your kids get time off of school and then a week back and then time off of school? Although, truthfully, this week it was like nobody really went to school anyway. I'm not arguing. I've actually enjoyed it. But it was, last week was a three-day week, a snow day, a one-day week. This week was a one-day week, election day, a one-day week, a snow day, and then they're back at school, and then they get a weekend, and then they have to get through 5 days of school, and then they get a week off.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
plus we save money by traveling on this off week.
Right. It's true. I don't look into those things. That's not, you know, it's not the stuff that I tend to look into, but somebody else in my house tends to manage those processes. But I guess speaking of processes, not rules for us, but rules for Major League Baseball are changing. You sent it over to me, so I guess we can go in the order of the things that you sent. And, you know, you wonder also with something like this, how much these things trickle down to the minors, how much they trickle down to college, even high school, who knows. The three batter minimum rule, you and I have talked about it. You don't like it because you're a left-hander and, you know, you're standing up for those who are hurling from the southpaw side, as it were.
Yes, those disadvantaged people that I'm a part of.
Well, I mean, you're disadvantaged.
Depending on how you look at it.
Until you're playing basketball and you go to the hoop and people play you to the right and you get an easy bucket out of it, Trey Ravenel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then it's a nice advantage.
Right.
But, yeah, we've talked about it before, but now it's official. Now it's actually upon us. And it's unfortunate. I just don't like interfering with strategy. That's the key theme here as I look at these new rules, is you're telling a team, whether it's a starting pitcher or a reliever, they have to face a minimum of three batters. Now, the only caveat here, other than the illness or injury, is if you finish out the side, then you don't have to go to the next inning. So I do like that part of it, but I also think that this really could impact, you talk about trickle down, this could really impact the left-handed specialist. It seems to me it's going to be more of a strategy that we only want to use our left-handed specialist out of the bullpen when there's two outs. So then you can come in and face the tough lefty batter, and if you get him out, great. The inning is over. You don't have to come back out and start the next inning. But what if you don't? You know, then you're in trouble. Then you got to face some righties, and you know, whereas in previous years that left-handed specialist would have been taken out and off the hook, now he's got to, you know, stay out there and figure a way to finish off the side.
And I like it because there are times it will backfire, and it will backfire in a big situation, and it will burn a team, you know, where you bring in the guy to get the one out and you don't get the one out of him. And, you know, the other thing is, yeah, it does put a premium on a guy getting multiple outs. I think it will be interesting to see how it plays out. My take on it is that I was really just getting annoyed with the number of pitching changes within games, Red Sox, Yankees. And what they're really trying to do with all this stuff is speed up the game and make it more watchable to casual fans. Because honestly, I mean, let's face it, like you go to a Red Sox, Yankees game, you're banking 4.5 hours in your life. That's not in any way family entertainment. And so baseball has, because of this reliance on working the count and strategy, and hey, it's all good. Like, I understand this is how the game is played now, but you know, when you go from a long game was 3 hours to now 4.5, 5, it becomes really unwatchable to a casual fan.
Yeah, from start to finish, it pretty much is unwatchable in the regular season. And I do like it, as you're saying here, to speed up the game. I think that is the biggest benefit. But I'd rather speed up the game a different way. I'd rather institute the pitch clock, 20 seconds, 25 seconds, whatever it takes. I think that would guarantee that the game would be sped up instead of hoping for one or two fewer pitching changes throughout the game.
Yeah, you know, the pitch clock wouldn't be bad. I have a feeling that that one's next. But, you know, as of right now, I think they're trying to fix what is a legitimate problem. And, you know, some of the obvious things are substitutions. It makes it a bit of a bummer, you know, because you did have the opportunity to have that lefty one out guy. The only thing that kind of makes it interesting here is, and we've talked about this on the show before, if a guy comes in and faces one batter and then is injured, he can leave the game. What is missing here, and we've talked about this part specifically, is a what next? Like, okay, let's say the guy has food poisoning. And I mean, because I can already see guys, you know, I can see Oliver Perez like bent over at the waist, like, oh, like he's Ferris Bueller. And I can already see that happening. And then, oh, yeah, he got over it. He's fine the next day. I think that there needs to be some kind of stipulation in here where if you do that, you have to sit out the next game.
That would be nice. I like that idea.
I mean,
it is a slippery slope.
Yeah, in football, you're injured. Even if they have to stop the game to get you off the field, you sit the next play.
Right. Yeah, and it is a slippery slope. I mean, what if we get one of these lefties come in who doesn't get the lefty out that they're trying to get out, and then all of a sudden they feel sick to their stomach because they have to face a couple righty sluggers? I mean, where do we draw the line on this illness or injury?
Right. Or if you're a lefty pitcher, do you, as you're in the bullpen, just crush a couple Taco Bell burritos knowing full well that you're going to be making a run to the bathroom rather than the border?
Right.
I don't know. That is my, like, does that enter into strategy? No, never will enter into strategy. That's just my, yeah. I'm hungry. Anyway, so the three-batter minimum rule. The next one is the active roster size, and I really have a feeling that these two next rules go hand in hand, and my thought is that they go hand in hand as a way to appease the players' union. The active roster size is bumping up from 25 to 26, and 25 is where it's been for a while. It dropped down to 24 years ago, went back to 25, but it went 25 to 26. Half of them, your maximum number of pitchers you can carry is 13. What that basically makes it is so that you are not carrying 14 guys. And it also makes it so that, I guess, the first rule that we were talking about, the three batter minimum, that also makes it so that you can't do the opener who throws a batter and leaves.
Right. If you're going to employ an opener, he's got to face three batters.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I guess that makes it, if you're lucky, a guy gets out of three batters in 10, 12 pitches and you're done. You know, and that strategy still would work. But so the 13 pitchers, 26 on the active roster for the union, now basically you have April, May, June, July, August. You have 5 months of one additional player, which plays into the next rule that we're talking about. The maximum that you can expand your roster to in September, and I guess the only number in September, is now 28, of which 14 are pitchers instead of the 40 that it's been as long as I've been alive.
Right. And that one's strange. So now you're locked into bringing up one pitcher and one batter. But what if that's not what you want to do with your farm system? What if you have two young hitters that you really want to bring up, or two pitchers? It's a little bit strange to do that and limit the exposure that the minor leaguers can have to the big leagues in September.
Yeah, the thing then, I guess, the argument would be, okay, if you have two pitchers or two hitters that you want to bring up, get rid of a guy on the active roster. True. You know, your 26th guy, send him somewhere else, and now you're in the right place, and you
banish him
to some minor league outpost somewhere, and that's it. But you know, the bigger challenge that I have, and we've all known guys who have gotten the September call up, you know, and then there's some who have toiled in the minor leagues for a really long time and have gotten the September call up, and might have been guy number 38 or 39 in what a lot of teams would consider to be a wasted season. But these guys got, you know, even an at bat, 10, 12, 20 at bats in the major leagues. That, to me, is the single biggest thing that you're losing. I get that teams have abused it and have these completely insane number of pitchers on their staffs, but now you're making it so that some of these guys who might have had an opportunity all of a sudden don't have that opportunity anymore. Did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay. I don't know. What's your thought on that piece?
Yeah, I was just distracted. I was starting to think about this Blue Jays spring training experience.
Oh.
But yeah, you make a good point there.
All right. So I'll take that as going through the rest of them. September roster 40, you have to declare that a player is a position player or a pitcher. And the only reason that matters is in a blowout. I guess a game that's sort of gotten away, if you're down five runs, you can no longer go to a position player to pitch. He's got to be a declared pitcher. The interesting thing within that rule is a pitcher is defined as anyone who has had 20 MLB innings pitched and 20 MLB starts as a position player. Okay, two questions. One, what if you miss the entire year before with injury to your arm, like Ohtani has?
Yeah.
He didn't have 20 innings last year, so can he pitch? And then the next one is 20 MLB starts as position player. Well, is position player a DH?
Yes. Position player or DH.
Okay. All right. So I'm good there. All right. So talk to me about the Blue Jays. What'd you see? They're not at Dunedin anymore, are they?
They are.
Okay.
So here's the thing with the Blue Jays. So I'm down here. We're obviously not to spring training games yet, but we have pitchers and catchers reporting this week. So I thought to myself, well, the Blue Jays are right up the road here because we're just south of Clearwater. So they're basically the closest team to us, and they are connected to the Fisher Cats. So I like this. I want to go out there and, you know, get a taste of the spring action here. So I first thing I was trying to do is figure out what day would be available, and I realized that everybody reported this Wednesday. First official practice with the pitchers and catchers was going to be yesterday, Thursday. So then I started doing research on, okay, exactly where is the ballpark, of course, in Dunedin. And I learned that they have a new ballpark this year for the games called the TD ballpark. But, of course, a lot of these spring training teams hold a lot of their workouts at the other complex, you know, the quote-unquote practice complex, which for the Blue Jays is called the Engelbert complex.
Okay.
So I started tweeting some of the beat reporters for the Blue Jays to figure out where is this first workout on Thursday going to be? Is it at TD ballpark? Is it at the Engelbert complex? And what time is it? Nobody was announcing what time it was going to start. And I did some other research, and I saw a description of how on that first pitchers and catchers practice day, it's often in the afternoon because they do press conferences in the morning. And so I'm scrambling around here on Twitter trying to, because I was Googling it and it couldn't find anything. So I'm scrambling around on Twitter trying to find out where it's going to be, what time it's going to start. Nobody's responding to me. I can't find anything. So finally, on Thursday morning, I realized, well, maybe I should just use the telephone and call the Blue Jays at TD ballpark.
Yep.
And ask a human, you know, face to face what the plan is here. And so I got a woman on the phone, and she informed me that the Blue Jays spring training practices are no longer open to the public.
Really?
Yeah. What is that?
Yeah, that's part of what spring training is.
It's supposed to be all access.
You know, it's like the Green Bay Packers all of a sudden deciding that the kids are no longer allowed to bring bikes to the players.
Right.
You know, it's just been banned.
That was a curveball for me. I didn't expect to hear that. I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about spring training is the all access, easy access, very laid back. And so I'm not quite sure why that is. I mean, perhaps it's the new ballpark. She said it's, you know, this year we're not doing that. So it sounded like a new policy to me. So a little bit frustrating. But there has been some other news out of Blue Jays camp. The bench coach, Dave Hudgens, was part of that Astros staff, which we may talk about more later. But kind of interesting to see how this is really spreading out the Astros saga. And he was the hitting coach for the Astros when they won it in 2017. Then he went over to the Blue Jays in 2018 as a bench coach. And they interviewed him this week while we were down here about that scandal. And, you know, he's one more guy who has admitted knowledge of what was going on, admitted that he didn't do anything to interfere. And so far, he's still there. He still has his position with the Blue Jays. So interesting to see how this will play out and who will lose their job and who will keep their job.
Yeah, that thing has been weird. And kind of the non-apology apologies have also been weird from the players. And, you know, the players are sort of the ones who've gotten off with minimal injury to themselves. You know, nobody has given a valid explanation for why Jose Altuve didn't want his jersey ripped off after hitting that game-winning home run. That could be one. Like, I know that after I hit the biggest home run of my life, I'm concerned about what my wife thinks if my teammates rip my shirt off.
Yeah, right. That's the first thought to everybody's mind.
I mean, seriously, like at that point in time, my mind, it's Valentine's Day. I mean, that's what I'm focused on. So, you know, I don't know, maybe the Blue Jays want practice closed off because they're working on some elaborate sign passing system. The most amazing thing to me with any of this is that in, you know, 2020 or 2019 or even 2017, with all of the player movement, that it took a couple years for this to get out. And, you know, the Jeff Passan on ESPN this morning was talking about how players, the sign stealing thing was being talked about in 2017. It was rumored. It took about 2 years for it to sort of percolate. Now people are talking about buzzers, and that was 2019. So he was saying, give that a couple years, that'll percolate. So who knows? You know, right now it's just kind of it's a stain on baseball. And of course, you have now the manager or the general, not the general manager, the owner of the Astros saying, I don't think it was really to our advantage. This is obviously a guy who's never played baseball.
Oh, yeah. Come on now.
Right.
We're not buying that.
No, it is basically identical to if you put headsets in every player's head, you know, helmet in football and had somebody upstairs who had decoded all the calls that a quarterback makes and you know exactly what the audibles are going to be for every play and you can adjust accordingly. How do you think a football team is going to react to that?
Oh man, that would be the best gift ever.
Right.
The whole NFL would be changed. The offenses wouldn't dominate anymore.
Right.
Defenses would dominate.
Stolen playbook, whatever. I mean, but any of that stuff, you know, there needs to be an element of surprise or intelligence that goes along with it. Just stealing a sign completely takes that away. You know, and yeah, it's been done before. And yeah, it's a part of the game and we get it. The difference is when you're changing your signs with the idea that you know that somebody's going to be picking the signs, you're playing the game in an appropriate mental fashion. When somebody's using a computer to steal your stuff, that's an entirely different story. So, all right, well, we're going to actually try to, we'll try to call Kevin Gibbs because he's our next guest, the Bedford High girls basketball coach. Hanson's going to stay on from wherever he is down in Florida. And I guess that's it right now. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Hey, welcome back to Fox on Sports here on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen, he's down in Florida, and we're using modern technology to conference in a third person, Bedford High girls basketball coach Kevin Gibbs. Coach, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
Kevin Gibbs with the best radio voice on this phone call. 13 games in, the Lady Bulldogs sit there at 10 wins and 3 losses. How does this jibe with your expectations going into the season?
Well, obviously you never plan to lose any games going into a season, but it's going to happen. Division One is vastly improved over the past few seasons, which is a good thing for girls basketball in New Hampshire, but it does cause there to be more games that become grinded out types of wins as opposed to easier wins. But overall, this has made our team better. And again, with the illnesses and injuries that we've had, there have been some challenges, but to get to 10-3 with some of the barriers that we've had, we're pretty happy. We're pretty happy.
Coach, we want to ask you about those injuries because you've been hit by a boatload of them already this season. So how do you adjust during the season when the roster is so fluid?
Well, it's definitely been a challenge. Over the course of the season, 10 of the 30 girls in the program have been injured at one point or another, including 4 with concussions. Add to that the fact that all of the typical winter illnesses that have been going around seems to have ravaged us from time to time. Last year, we didn't have to call up any JV players to assist in practices. This year, it's been pretty much the norm. Of course, the benefit has been additional playing time for many players. Catherine Pennick, Marina Braga, and Emma Kazajanski have all seen significant minutes this year, and they've contributed to our success. It's also giving us more options in the games that we have left this season, and it's helping us prepare the team for next year.
Yeah, so I guess that is one of the silver linings about these injuries is that players get more playing time during the games. Something I hadn't really thought about is more practice time and an opportunity for JV players to practice with the varsity where otherwise they may not have. But it's sort of like you get an acquisition when somebody comes back and a lot of mixing and matching. But have you had any pleasant surprises this year with the shuffling lineup?
I think things have we've seen improvement in players sooner than we'd hoped, and a lot of it has been trial by fire, if you will. Catherine Pennick was expected coming into the season to be a strong factor for us. When she sustained her concussion, it was a setback for her and us, but she's returned and truly hasn't missed a beat. One of the players that's really benefited from some of the extra playing time has been Marina Braga. She's made significant gains this year. She brings toughness and a deceptively strong offensive game. Emma Kazajanski, who missed all of last year due to an ACL injury, has given us some really good minutes. She shows a really strong ability to get to the rim. And then we knew coming in that Sydney Grogan was our only freshman on the team, would be a defensive buzzsaw, and she hasn't disappointed us. As soon as she comes in, our defensive energy goes up another notch. So, you know, in terms of the injuries, it's been tough. Sometimes it's been kind of a patchwork quilt. The best example of that was the Memorial game. We had Allie Morgan go down with 2 minutes to go in the third quarter. We had Catherine Pennick out at that point with a concussion. We had Sydney Suazo out recovering from some surgery. And we had Amanda Jonas foul out, and we had Isabella King playing with 4 fouls, and still we had an opportunity to win that game in overtime. So it does give other players an opportunity to step in and participate in games that are pretty significant, and gives them a chance to see what it's really like, you know, playing D1 basketball in New Hampshire.
It does present those great opportunities, and it allows you to see players at game speed too. That helps out. We're with Bedford High basketball coach Kevin Gibbs, and we mentioned one of the seniors, Allie Morgan. Amanda Jonas is another one. Of course, there are others on the roster as well, but you have a couple in Allie and Amanda who are in the thick of the college recruiting process. How do you navigate that with your players?
Well, both of them have committed for the next year. The landscape in girls basketball has changed dramatically over the last few years. We lagged behind the boys in terms of how the recruiting process goes, but we are quickly catching up. Club coaches do have more impact in the process. I'm a club coach myself in the New England Crusaders program, and I've seen this firsthand. But there's still a role for the high school coach in the process. I was actually able to assist Allie Morgan in her quest for her scholarship to play at the University of West Florida. I reached out to their staff quite a few times, kind of fleshing out what I knew Allie would bring to their program. And their offer to her, I don't know if you folks are aware, your listeners are aware, but the University of West Florida is a very strong Division II program that plays out of Pensacola, Florida. There are really four very, very strong Division II leagues in the U.S., and UWF is in one of them. Their offer to her was very well deserved. She's going to contribute very strongly to that program. Amanda Jonas's situation was a little different. I've been her club coach for the past 2 years, along with coaching her at Bedford, and I've had kind of a more direct role in her overall recruitment. I have reached out to numerous coaches. A lot of coaches have reached out to me about her, and I've been able to help navigate the process with her. It's important to find the right fit, both academically and athletically, and Amanda has found that at Rhode Island College down in Providence, actually North Providence, Rhode Island. Their coach, Jenna Cosgrove, is a tremendous teacher of the game. She was the lead assistant at Quinnipiac for quite a few years, and I'm confident that Amanda will have a great experience there. Interestingly, I'm still working on our last senior, Emma Rosenbaum, who has been accepted as an early decision candidate to her top academic choice, Northwestern, out in Chicago. I've been working with her, or working on her, I should say, strongly suggesting that she consider playing club ball there. Division I club ball, for you and your listeners, you might not know, but it's extremely competitive, and Emma would excel in that environment. But also, in talking about the recruiting process, we've had at least one Division I coach in the stands for almost every game we've played this year, home and away. Isabella King, one of our juniors, is drawing a lot of attention, and her recruitment is really, really heating up. The best part of this is that these coaches have also had an opportunity to identify other players at Bedford who weren't necessarily on their radar. And while I'm not going to name one or two, I can, because of the private conversations I've had with these coaches, I can tell you that their eyes have been opened, and they now have a couple of other kids that they're looking to follow as we go through the spring and summer club season.
And that obviously makes it a lot of fun for the kids too, when they know that, hey, there's somebody else in the stands that's not mom and dad watching this game tonight.
Exactly. Well, it's funny. They don't always know that those college coaches are there. As a matter of fact, it's kind of comical, because after the game, you know, oftentimes they recognize the same reporters from the local newspapers or web podcasts or whatever that come up and talk to me. But then you'll see them notice, you know, somebody come with a Drexel sweatshirt on, or a Lafayette sweatshirt on, University of Maine or whatever, and they're like, wait a minute, I didn't know somebody else was here. And you know, they're all kind of looking over and seeing what's going on, and you know, it's important for them to understand that college coaches do get out during the winter season. Even though they're playing their own games, they get out to check out what's out there in terms of talent. And as I said, I've had some really great post-game conversations with these coaches about other players on our roster, and again, anything that promotes Bedford High players in terms of fulfilling their dream of playing college basketball, I'm all for it.
It certainly helps. We're here with Coach Kevin Gibbs, the coach of the Bedford High girls basketball team, and big game tonight against Exeter. It's Valentine's Day. It's Friday night, even though this will probably air Saturday or Sunday, depending on when you're listening. You've got five games left, tonight's game, and then the playoffs. So the goal, obviously, is to finish strong. How do you build momentum on your team as you head into the playoffs?
Well, obviously, you're always looking to improve in various areas of the game. You know, one of the things that we do is we review film. I encourage the girls to take a look, and unlike past years, they've really embraced the program that we have. We use Huddle. And it's great, because you come in after a game and you start to talk about the game, and the girls are fully engaged because they've had a chance to reflect and also watch themselves. Obviously, we had a bit of a hiccup with our loss at Merrimack on Tuesday. It was disappointing, but We spent Wednesday and Thursday identifying and working on what needed to be fixed. Tonight's going to be the first step in implementing some of those fixes. You know, as with every game, the aim is to get better. As I said, we want to enter the playoffs on a strong note. We have some pretty strong competition coming up, especially next week with Pinkerton and Portsmouth. But we also we know that we have, you know, the game plans and the players to get things done. And sometimes a game like the Merrimack game is good to sit back and revisit some of the things that we were doing that made us successful that we might have gotten away from. So, you know, there's always, you learn from wins, you learn more from losses.
I couldn't agree with you more. So we are joined by Coach Kevin Gibbs of the Bedford High basketball program. And the last question, and this is a tough one, the basketball community and the girls and women's sports communities were saddened by the passing of Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna late last month. Of course, these are girls who grew up knowing him. He's a one-name athlete. What sort of impact did he have on the players, and what sort of impact did he have on women's sports?
Well, again, I'm going to draw upon my club coaching world for a moment. There's been a very strong and ever-growing impact of professional players, both men and women, on the girls' basketball game. Kevin Durant, as a great example, has gotten heavily involved in girls' basketball in the club world. Kobe Bryant, as you well know, with his Mamba's program and, you know, the ability to build a facility and sponsor teams, again, just really pushes the exposure of girls' basketball and the development. Grant Hill's another one. I'm trying to think, there's a professional football player whose name eludes me at the moment, but you always see him at a lot of the major tournaments because he's supporting his daughters and their team. So when you look at the overall, there's you know, the tragic you know, crash and death of the Bryants and teammates, you know, did have a strong impact on the whole basketball world. Our players, just like everyone else, they were shocked and saddened. But the silver lining, if there can be one, is the attention that continues to be paid, and even more so being paid to girls club sports and women's athletics in general. The WNBA is finally starting to receive the attention it deserves. These are the best female basketball players in the world. High school and club teams, both basketball and non-basketball, continue to build the foundation by providing opportunities for young women to improve and excel in sports, in the sports that they love. Sports teaches so many valuable life lessons that these athletes will carry with them in their professional lives. In the end, the experience is the reward, and while it's sad that an accident like that draws additional attention, I think what has happened on in terms of the ripple effect is it's created the awareness of a lot of additional stories as to just what is going on the women's side of sports. And so, again, as I said, a silver lining, if there can be one. And as with everything, you want to move forward and continue to build. You know, one of the things that I always tell my players is that you know, it's not about the four, it's about the 40. A lot of kids focus on playing college basketball and you know, moving on. And it's, for me as a coach, it's about helping them, if they looked and want to play at that next level, to find the right fit to set themselves up for the next 40 years. Because eventually, you're going to take that last shot. You're going to play that last game. You're going to lace them up for the last time. And you want to make sure that these young women are set for what they want to do with their lives. And so it's kind of rewarding to help them find that great educational fit. And even for those players who aren't looking to play in college, it's great to be able to provide them with a positive experience so they can take the lessons that they learned from teamwork into whatever they desire to do in their adult lives as well.
It's I'd never heard the don't focus on the four, focus on the 40, but that's extremely sound advice.
Well, it's a philosophy that has kind of developed through our AAU program, the Crusaders, and I've tried to spread that whenever and wherever I can. So many people get hung up on the school, you know, the name. And you see this especially on the boys' side. You know, they will shun an offer from a school that probably is a better fit for them both on the court and in the classroom, to get that scholarship to, you know, the university of whatever. And yet they get there and they realize that they are, you know, the 12th man on a 13-man team or the 11th man on a 14-man team. And all too often you see them transferring to what was a better fit and what would have been a better fit in the first place. And so we try to head that off at the pass and help these young women find a fit that really is the most appropriate one for them, both in and out of the classroom. And, you know, I could give you scores of examples. I won't take up your airtime at this point, but so often you get a text from a young lady who's like, you know, thanks so much for helping me. You know, this has been a great place for me. I'm so glad that I ended up at fill in the blank. And that's really what it's all about. That's the reward in coaching is helping these young ladies. And what's even better is, you know, at Bedford, when you come out of the locker room and you see players from former years waiting for your kids to come out of the locker room to give them a big hug, and to give you a big hug, to give me a big hug, I should say, because, you know, it's really about helping them achieve their dreams. And in the end, that's what it's all about. I mean, winning championships is great, but it's the, you know, it's the crazy breakfasts after, you know, volunteering at running events. It's you know, being able to, you know, spend time together in a bowling alley or you know, climbing a rock wall or whatever. Just doing some other fun things that will be the true memories that these young ladies have years down the road. It won't be the, you know, the 1 point loss to Merrimack or the, you know, the 10 point win over, you know, Central. It'll be the you know, the crazy time that they had, you know, in practice after a win or the bus ride out to the seacoast where they were singing songs, you know, at the top of their lungs. Those are the things they remember. And that's what you really want to have them be able to take down the road.
Right. You hit it on the head with some of those too, where a tournament, whether you win, lose or draw, generally you don't really remember a whole lot of the stuff within it. What you remember is the car trips or the random places that you stopped with somebody to eat or, you know, funny, I'll ask my 14-year-old daughter, you know, about things that happened, and she'll remember, you know, something playing with her buddies on the team that I have no concept actually ever happened.
And coming up with healthy, funny nicknames for each other. You know, just as a quick example, right now, you know, again, these are women, young ladies who are going to be in college in a year, many of them. And yet, you know, they talk about their favorite movies like Kung Fu Panda and, you know, start giving each other nicknames from characters in the movie and, you know, the laughs that they have over that. You need to mix the serious and the fun because, you know, ultimately, if it's not fun, it's not worth doing.
I completely hit it right. So, well, we appreciate the time. Good luck in tonight's game against Exeter. And we'll be rooting for you the rest of the way. And I know we have a couple of them on the schedule, too.
Thank you so much. And as always, we appreciate all that you do to promote Bedford sports every season. It's great. And we thank you very much.
It's a lot of fun.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you.
All right. You guys take care.
You too.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Now Hanson's got to hang up from there. See if he can do that without hanging up on me.
We can, we'll hang up and we'll start again.
All right. We'll take a quick break and, our thanks as well to Coach Kevin Gibbs, the coach of the Bedford High girls basketball team. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hanson.
I was like, then there it is again. It has been an interesting off season for baseball because, I guess it's been an off season of discontent, where we're talking about the Astros and the cheating scandal. We're talking about trading Mookie Betts and everybody. It's funny how, it just never ceases to amaze me how, fans love to take the side of billionaire owners ahead of players. But you know, that trade was largely made necessary by some of the signings of the Dave Dombrowski era, because the Red Sox didn't have what it would have taken to sign Mookie. Like, and who are any of us truly to say, like, it's easy for me to sit here and say, yeah, it's generational money. Like the amount of money that you're going to be taking care of your kids, your children's children's children. But, you know, who's any of us to say, we'll take the 300 and leave the 400 on the table?
Yeah, it's a tough one all around in terms of the money for both sides. It is frustrating. You know, the first thing I think about when you open with that broad description of what's happening is John Henry, and being in Red Sox Nation, you know that the Red Sox have a high payroll year in and year out. You know that Fenway Park is always sold out. You know that they make tons of money and way more than some of these small market teams that you and I have followed closely and rooted for over the years, like the Kansas City Royals. But it's unexpected to hear that the Red Sox really are going to make this move because of finances. And yes, it makes sense to potentially save tens of millions of dollars for John Henry in terms of payroll, avoiding luxury tax and penalties. But at the same time, I mean, it's the Red Sox, and you figure they'd find a way to re-sign one of the best young players in the game.
Right. You would think so, but they wouldn't make the trade. Well, I guess they were probably thinking of a few things. One is, all right, what are our chances to re-sign him? And they may have known something that we didn't as far as whether he was intending to stay. He always seemed very happy to be here and was a valued member of the Red Sox, but who knows? And they may have thought that it was going to be harder to re-sign him than it may actually have been. And they're also looking at it saying, okay, we know that once he hits the free agent market, we know that the Dodgers are going to be in play. There are other teams that will be in play potentially assigning him. At least this way, we're going to get something back out of it instead of a compensatory draft pick. So, you know, they made it so that they've gotten something. And allegedly what the something is a pretty good something. They wound up getting three players. I've seen, because I watch a lot of Dodger games, I've seen Alex Verdugo play pretty regularly. And Verdugo, to me, he's one that people will like here. He can do everything on the field. And I think he's going to fit really nicely into that mold. And not to mention having the opportunity to play every day, he's going to be a very useful member of the Red Sox. Just a very athletic, good player, exciting to watch. So people up here will like him. The next one who was on the list was the Dodgers' first-round draft pick back in 2017. And I just like it from the standpoint of we got a kid now that if you're talking about Jeter, could you be talking about the Yankee shortstop? Maybe. Could you be talking about the Red Sox shortstop? Maybe. We don't know. And his name is Jeter Downs. He was the first-round draft pick of the Reds in 2017. The Reds wound up for some reason I thought he was a Dodgers first round pick, but not the case apparently. He played for 2 years in the Reds farm system and then wound up as a Dodger. So it must've been in that Yasiel Puig trade, and was in the Dodgers farm system, played in Rancho Cucamonga in the Cal League last year, hit about 270, was on base regularly, some nice power too. And Rancho's not an easy place to get the ball out of the park. Hit 19 homers, stole 23 bases, and then they called him up to Double-A. He hit .333 in 12 games there. So he looks like one who will be an exciting player. And, you know, the other one is another minor league player who's very useful, who I don't know much about, named Connor Wong. So, you know, the Red Sox are obviously making this play as this is something where we're looking further out than this year.
Yeah, and I'll defer to you on the Verdugo description. And I've just been pulling up the stats here, and you're right. The nice thing about Jeter Downs is, as a middle infielder, to hit 24 home runs is terrific. And I pulled up a clip of him. I do like his pop. He's got, it's almost like, you know, surprising pop, almost like Mookie Betts, where he's got not the biggest frame, and you wonder, how does he have so much power? But he just times it so well. So I like that. And he also had 24 stolen bases last year. And the year before that, he had 37 stolen bases, which it's speed is harder to come by, and teams don't trust base runners to attempt stolen bases as much as they used to. So it's nice to see a potential middle infielder with the power and the speed combination. And then in terms of Connor Wong, just to give our listeners some information on his stats, he also hit 24 home runs last year between high A and double A, batted 281. So again, you know, a catcher with some power. I like how the trade panned out. You know, after the delay there, I'm a little bit more excited about this package than the initial package.
Yeah, I would say so. I could understand obviously the concern about the pitcher who was coming over from the Twins, Brewster Gratterall, you know, with the arm injuries and all that sort of stuff. And for the Red Sox, they were looking at him and deciding that he wasn't going to be a starter, which is what they wanted him to be. He was going to be a closer. But if he's throwing 103, that wouldn't be a bad little pet to have in your bullpen either.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
You know, the Aroldis Chapman mode. So, but for Verdugo, you know, again, he's a guy who can play anywhere in the outfield. And I guess going back to your thought about Jeter Downs, yeah, teams are reluctant to steal bases, but if you get a guy who's a smart base runner who can read a ball off the bat and go first to third on a ball hit to the outfield or on anything that's hit into the gap, score, you know, speed is still useful. It's just a speed used differently than it's been used in the past.
Right. Yeah. And, and looking at his at-bats, he had 460 at-bats last year to get those 24 home runs. So he could easily be a 30-30 guy.
Yeah, I would say that's what they're projecting with him. It's got to be. And, you know, with a guy who can field, you know, you have a – and the name. Like, how could you not want to have a guy named Jeter playing in your infield? I mean, really. So, you know, you look at all that stuff together. Hey, it's a logical thing. I hope it pans out for him because – he does seem like the kind of guy that would be a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, that's ultimately what you want. You want kids walking around in jerseys of their favorite Red Sox players. And to me, that's the biggest thing that's going to be missing about Mookie because he left or because he was traded. There are a lot of kids who, if you asked them up here and down in Mass, if you asked them who their favorite player was, they would have not even taken a breath and said Mookie Betts.
Oh, man. You had to bring it back down because I was starting to feel positive about these prospects, and then you remind me of that glaring hole that we're all going to have without Mookie because you're right. I mean, not only the immense talent, but a fan favorite just because of how he played the game, his personality. He is going to be a major loss. But I guess you're also quite partial to the Dodgers, so you got to be feeling good in that respect.
Oh yeah, I'll be the guy walking around in the Mookie Betts shirt. I'm hoping that when I'm out there later this month, I can find one and come back here and wear it just to kind of get under everybody's skin. But you know, I selfishly, I'm hoping that he can be the piece of the puzzle that gets him a title. It's been, 32 years now? It was 88 when they won the last one. It's time. So get my guys a title, get the monkey off Kershaw's back. Like, you know, come on, it's time. So, all right.
Well, especially if it's going to come down to the Dodgers and the Astros. We all want the Dodgers to get it this time. So maybe he'll be the difference maker.
I would love for the Astros. It pains me because I'm like a cat with buttered toast on its back. I don't know which way to go. I want the Astros to get it because I want Dusty to get it. I'm a big Dusty Baker fan, but I also don't want their bad behavior rewarded. I'd really like them to go like 70-92 and, you know, get a little bit of the universe flipping its script on them. But I don't know that that's going to happen either. We'll see. Anyway, it's fun to have things to talk about and things to root for as we head into baseball season, even though there's still snow on the ground. So we will. All right. We're done talking about baseball. We'll talk about the NBA All-Star game first. Two teams in the All-Star game. There is Team LeBron and Team Giannis. I bet on the Bucks the other night with not realizing the Giannis was gone. And I was like, oh, this is the steal of the century. And then I watched the – I turned the game on. I'm like, huh, he must be sitting out because they're down. Nope. And I look it up. Sure enough, he was missing the game due to fatherhood. So congrats, yeah, to Giannis. And they still almost came back and won it too. But and then speaking of crazy games, how about that Celtics Clippers game last night that I thought the Celtics had it in the bag? Ran into a friend of mine at the gym this morning. I said, I couldn't believe it. I woke up this morning and I checked the score. He said, they almost lost it. I said, yeah, I went to double overtime. So
yeah, I got to watch the end of it. That was an exciting game. Great way for the Celtics to go into the All-Star break.
Yep.
Beating the championship contender in the Clippers and going to double overtime. And I really like the statement that it makes and the good vibes that the Celtics will have heading into the break and looking to the stretch run. I mean, I really like how their team matches up in the playoffs, because you can't just take away one guy and think you're going to hold the Celtics down. They just keep coming at you, whether it's Tatum, who almost had 40 points, Hayward had a double-double. Kemba Walker played well last night. I think he may have almost had 10 rebounds. And then Marcus Smart does everything. So, and then Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown didn't even play yesterday. They won that game against the Clippers.
Yeah, there are a lot of weapons on that team. And the other thing that really is fun about the weapons that are on that team is you have guys who are homegrown, but you also have some smart moves that have been made by the Celtics to pick up some of these guys. And Kemba Walker was the right guy to be the guy here.
He was perfect, no doubt.
He is the right guy. He's a humble dude who, you know, Tatum has a great game last night, and he basically says, yeah, it's his time. Like, you guys don't realize he's the best player on the floor. So you like to see that, as opposed to the guy who the cameras tend to draw the cameras. Kemba Walker is like, how can I dish out praise like I'm dishing out the basketball? So, all right, let's look, because we have, 6 minutes, give or take, NBA All-Star game. I'll give you the first pick, unless you don't
want. Oh, really?
Yeah, go.
Okay, I'll take the first pick. So what we do here, of course, every All-Star weekend is we pick players in the All-Star game, and then we track their points, and it's a Fox versus Hansen competition.
Yes.
So you mentioned Giannis. And I'll take him because you see it a lot. You see players after the birth of a child, they come back and they're so excited and relieved that everything went well, and they really excel on the court. And we know that Giannis is basically unstoppable. So I'll go with Giannis here as my first pick.
I like that pick. I'm going to take Anthony Davis.
Oh, that would have been my next pick.
Well, of course. I'm surprised it wasn't your first pick. All right. Who's your next?
So should we go all starters first, or can we go anywhere on the roster?
You can go anywhere on the roster.
All right. I will go with Harden to get some points on Team LeBron. You know he's going to be jacking up some threes.
All right. So you go Harden. I'm going to go Luka.
Ooh. Okay. I will go with the other young player that he was traded for, Mr. Trae Young, your favorite. I know he probably would have been your next pick.
I actually almost took Trae Young instead of Luka Doncic. I mean, that's no lie. It crossed my mind. I'm going to go LeBron. You know, I think there is a narrative that is going to be written for this thing, because there are going to be two storylines here in this game. David Stern passing away, and Kobe Bryant and his untimely passing as well. And I really, you know, whoever is going to have the big game in this game is going to say, I did it for Kobe Bryant. And I see LeBron wanting to just fill it up for Kobe.
I'm right with you. That makes a lot of sense. Very strong pick. I don't really like the picks you're making here.
All right, who's your next one?
My next one, I mean, you play the narrative of AD going back to Chicago. I'm going to go to the bench here. First bench pick is Jimmy Butler going back to Chicago. I think he'll be extra motivated.
All right. So you got him. All right. Who would be my next logical? God, there's so many scorers in this thing. Russell Westbrook.
Oh, again, he would have been my next pick.
That's good. All right.
Not
go.
Good.
Yeah.
I'll go to the probably the biggest, strongest, toughest guy to defend if he gets aggravated down in the paint, and that is Mr. Joel Embiid. Got to get a Jayhawk in here.
Yep. I like the Jayhawk on Jayhawk violence earlier this week, too, with him and one of the Morrises. Oh, yeah.
That's right, Embiid and Marcus Morris. That's right.
I'm going to make you mad again and go Kawhi.
Yeah. Yep. If he's interested, if he feels like trying.
I know. I don't know. We'll see. All right, next.
All right. How about the star young player we're just talking about, Tatum?
Yep. I will use my next one on Donovan Mitchell.
Okay.
A New Hampshire high school product.
Yes. Spider Mitchell.
Yep.
He was one of the two guys I was looking at next. I will go to somebody else off that bench of Team Giannis, and it is Chris Middleton. He's really stroking it this year, so I'll look for some points from him.
All right. My next one, Devin Booker.
Yes, the late addition.
Yep.
He was
who probably should have made it to begin with, let's face it. But
he should have made it to begin with. Yep. I would have taken him over Chris Paul initially.
Yeah,
He's got better numbers this year.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's see. All of my primary targets are gone, so I got to scramble here. I'll go with the guy who is terrible at shooting, but in an all-star game, you don't really need to shoot necessarily if you can get some layups and dunks, and that is Ben Simmons.
Siakam.
One word, Siakam.
Yep. All right. Who's your next? All the starters are gone now, by the way.
There is one starter left, and I think I might take him just so I can basically have Team Giannis starting five, and that's Kemba Walker.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, somehow I crossed him off. He has been such a class dude since college, probably before. I didn't follow him until he was playing at UConn, but just, you know, a perfect model franchise guy.
Yes, he is.
All right, so my next one, I'm going to take Arthritis Sabonis' oldest son, DeMontis.
Nice.
I don't know if it's his oldest son, but I'm assuming it is.
He's had a coming out party this season with multiple triple doubles recently.
No, I enjoyed watching him the other night.
Yeah. I will go with another 3-point shooter here in Mr. Kyle Lowry.
Okay, you got Lowry. I'm going to go. God, well, I don't know. There's some of these guys, like, I don't see the game going to them, but Brandon Ingram.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we're down to the final four here, so.
Right.
Well, Chris Paul, even though I don't think he deserved to be there in the first place, he has been playing well recently, and he's going to start with the ball in his hand, so in case he decides to shoot a bunch, I'll go with him.
All right, you got Chris Paul. I'm going to take Nikola Jokic.
Okay.
That we got two left, Gobert and Bam Adebayo.
Right. I'll take Gobert.
Oh, cool. All right. I'm going to post this on the Fox on Sports Facebook page just, you know, because we care about it. Nobody else on the planet does.
At a minimum, it's good for record-keeping purposes.
It's good for the fact that we're keeping the record of it. You know, and it's also funny if you look at it because it makes it look like Jason Tatum's nickname is Doodles.
Okay.
The box on the paper says Doodles, so it's Doodles Tatum.
Oh. Okay.
We may have just given him a new nickname. All right. So we didn't get to the other topic, but that's awesome because we have it saved up for next week. So thank you to our guest, Kevin Gibbs. Oh, and total points, what is on the line is lunch.
Okay.
All right. With that said, thank you to our guest, Kevin Gibbs, for coming to join us. Know he's got a busy day today with the game tonight against Exeter. So thanks, Coach. Thank you to Andrew Hansen for all of his prep and his wife for letting him get on the phone while he's on vacation. And thank you to everybody here at the station, Colleen, Bill, George, and Harry, for everything that they do. Go out this weekend, watch a sporting event, cheer, don't coach from the sidelines, and make it a great sports week. You have been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.